Hey, 2019 is upon us, and that means you need to go to leadingsaints.org and get the 2019 Ward Calendar. This is a huge wall calendar that shows every day of the year and does a fantastic job in the bishop's office, in the ward clerk's office, or even on the ward bulletin board. Go check it out at leadingsaints.org and order one today.
Hi, my name is Laura Jacobson, and I live in Ephrata, Washington. First off, I wanted to just say thank you to Kurt and your team. I have been listening to Leading Saints or Leading LDS for about a year and a half, 2 years, and I can't overemphasize the change that it has made in myself, and I appreciate all the content you've put out. It covers a huge spectrum. I first was introduced to Leading Saints by a friend of mine who was at the time a bishop in a ward in our area, and he was interviewed and his wife about how I lead. And I was intrigued, and I thought, what a great way to learn more about leadership in the church and things that we don't know. And I went from there and I got hooked immediately, and I appreciate every episode. When I first started listening, I thought, oh, this isn't a topic that concerns me. I was currently serving as a Relief Society president in my ward and thought, oh, that doesn't apply to what I do in the church. And I listened to it anyway, and I did that with every episode and found something in every episode that did apply to me and or leadership principles that I could apply as a Relief Society president. I started sharing it with my husband, and I said to him, Brian, you've got to listen to this. This is some amazing stuff. And almost every other day or whenever I listened to it, I would share with him something that I learned and got really excited about. And it's so unique because there is nothing else like this that us as lay leaders can share. We all have concerns. We all have things that we struggle with or worry about, and how to do that and implement that in our own leadership callings. I appreciate also the variety of topics, things that we don't talk about in the church that are talked about on the podcast, people who share their personal experiences, and we can understand different topics in a broader sense. So Kurt, I just wanted to thank you again for the content you produce, for your team, for your wife and her input. I currently am a bishop's wife. My husband has been bishop for about 18 months now, and it has been a great learning experience for both of us. There have been some struggle. There's been some learning and some growth. And even in our personal relationship with each other, we have grown as well. So I want to encourage anyone who's listening to this to take a listen to Leading Saints and take a step out there, out of your comfort zone, listen to something that might be uncomfortable to listen to, and resolve to make a change, because it sure made a change in my life, and I will be forever grateful for that. So be a leader and not a calling.
Welcome back to the Leading Saints podcast. My name is Kurt Frankham, your host. And if you're new to the Leading Saints podcast, this is a cute little podcast that we put together to help talk about all things leadership in the context of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So if you're a lay leader in the church, you're in the right place. If you're not, keep listening and then send this to a lay leader you know. And today I have the awesome opportunity to come to Phoenix, Arizona in January, which I was actually in Alaska last week, and I've seen quite a contrast in what Alaska's like in January and Phoenix in January. And I'm in the bishop's office of Bishop Jason Walker. How are you?
I'm doing super. How about you?
Good. Now, you've been a bishop about 7 months now.
Yep.
And were you listening to Leading Saints before that?
I got turned on to the podcast.
Just with your call or?
Just after. A friend sent me a link to it. I've never done it. What do we call it again? A podcast. I don't even know what it's called.
Yeah.
You're exclusive.
I'm the only podcast.
You're the only one that I have or ever will at this point ever.
This is how it should be.
That's not what I'm talking about. Listening. That's right.
Wow. This is a true fan here. So.
Yes. Yeah. A friend sent that to me about, hey, you might want to check this out. And sure enough, it was the inventory that has been recorded has been phenomenal.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you're still making your way through it, I would imagine.
Oh, it's in many versions multiple times.
Yeah. Nice. And you listened so closely that I showed up today and you brought me some hot tamales, my favorite candy.
Yeah.
And man, you're paying attention. You're like taking notes. Like,
hook okay, a brother up.
Candy.
Yes.
Hot tamales.
Good. Yes.
Nice. So I wanted you to help me out with the introduction of this, because who we're interviewing is a very special person, one you know well. This is your wife, right?
Yes.
And this is a How I Lead episode, How I Lead as a Bishop's Wife. And this is something we're trying to create more content around for those bishop's wives, because this is sort of the invisible leadership calling that's out there. And I've seen the tears of bishop's wives, mainly from my own and from my own wife. And so this is something I want to bring more content to and help those bishop's wives be better prepared to lead as a bishop's wife. So tell us about your wife. What should we expect in this episode? You just heard it. We just finished recording it.
Well, I'm a little biased, but
as we expect,
Jill's is not only a fantastic human being, but wonderful mother of three. I kind of like her. and we've been married for almost 27 years. So we're still figuring out a lot of things. We've got two daughters that live outside the house and a son that's 12. He's the kind of the free entertainment, and she keeps track of her boys in mm-hmm. the house. I'm included in the two boys,
right.
One being of the me and the 12-year-old. She's got great compassion. She's an individual that she loves people. She doesn't judge people. She really enjoys getting out and serving others in small and simple ways that people remember.
Yeah.
And it's always a great, great way for her as an example for me to make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to.
Nice. Nice. Well, it was fun to get to know her, and I'm excited to introduce her to the audience as well. But any specific point or principle that she hit on that people should listen closely to as we start this interview?
Yeah, I think she gives really good context around the change that can take place, not just with me, but with our relationship. And
because of the calling, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because you're not always quite sure what is supposed to take place when you're newly called as a bishop, but more importantly, as a bishop's wife, because she has much more responsibility keeping me in line, if you will. Because, you know, I think she looks at this as saying, hey, how do I balance all these things proactively rather than saying, hey, why would I take the time away from what he's currently doing? Which I think sometimes is how she internalizes things, but she is, she helps me in ways that I can't even begin to count.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to, we should wait no longer. So here is my interview with Jill Walker, the bishop's wife. Today, I find myself in a bishop's office in Phoenix, Arizona with Jill Walker. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Awesome.
How are you?
Very great. I mean, it's beautiful in Phoenix. I never knew January's like this existed.
Winter in Phoenix makes up for summer in Phoenix.
I bet. I probably won't come back then. But and I want to note that there, Bishop Walker, Jill's husband, Jason Walker, is in the room with us as well. But he does have a mic in front of him. But if you do have a comment, please let me know. So we'll insert it here. And then my wife is here too. So we're going to be doing a bishop's wife interview. And so you're the expert in this field, Alana. So don't hesitate to speak up. So tell us, what's just some general background to put you in context for those listening?
My husband was called to be bishop about 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. So we're just figuring out what that means for both of us and kind of enjoying the experience of learning that. We have lived in Phoenix for 7 years and have been in a couple different wards, so getting to know a lot of different people that way.
And before we recorded, you mentioned that he's been called twice as bishop in the last 7 months.
Yes, so he was called to be bishop the end of June, and then in December, our wards realigned, and so he was released for 10 or 15 minutes, and then recalled to a new ward that shares a boundary with our other ward.
Nice. So you've all been juggling the meeting the new people and making everyone feel welcome, remembering names and all that, right?
Yep.
Cool. So, and you heard the interview I did with my wife, Alana, about how I lead as a bishop's wife, right?
I did, yes.
And I put out a survey on there to gather various perspectives and as far as being a bishop's wife, because this is one area that it's the forgotten calling, the unofficial calling in the ward is as the bishop's wife. And so I was happy to see that I was coming to Mesa area or Phoenix, and there's a few on there that had submitted and yours is on there. So this is meant to be for sure. So tell us, what do you remember just as far as your husband being called as bishop? What do you remember from that experience?
Oh, wow. We were not expecting it at all. He had just received a call to be on the high council a few weeks prior. And so when the stake executive secretary called. We were like, what could this be? He just got a new calling. We don't know what's going on. Yeah. So it was a big shock to us. Looking back, we can see kind of the hand of the Lord in preparing us for it. But in the middle of it, we didn't even recognize that obviously was happening because it wasn't even on our radar. But the experience of being set apart as bishop was the most amazing thing ever. I've never felt the Spirit quite like that before. I wanted to stay in that room forever. It was a really neat experience. And then just watching him figure out this new calling and the compassion and love that he has the opportunity to share with people has been amazing.
Yeah. I would imagine during those first 6 months or so, you are sort of acclimatizing to this way of life now.
Yes. Yep.
Awesome. And so how would you describe, just in a nutshell, and we'll get into some of these details as far as some of the leadership principles that you recommend, but just in general, that those first 6-7 months, what did you expect? What did you not expect? What did you learn during that time?
I knew that he would be busy, that he would be away, just spending time with other people. I expected that and I was okay with that. I think what was hard was I started to feel emotions that I hadn't necessarily felt before. Like I had never in my life felt jealousy. But I kind of started to feel like kind of jealous of the people that got his time and attention. Mm. And I felt like he was distracted, I guess, by all the other people he was taking care of. And I started to feel bad about that. I felt like I had to make a choice to not let that happen anymore. Like I realized that that was Satan trying to make me unsupportive or unhappy in this opportunity that we had. And I really made a conscious effort to not let that be the emotion that I felt. And it's made a huge difference to me because it was hard to kind of just share him with a lot of people that needed a lot of help, you know? So that was probably the hardest part for me, was experiencing just emotions I wasn't really familiar with, feeling, you know, like he was busy. And
did you think there would be some new emotions that you'd feel, or?
No, I didn't really think about it.
Yeah.
I didn't really think about what it would be like for me. I was in the beginning, just more like, how are you going to do this? How are you going to juggle this? What's this going to be like? How will you conduct, you know, like just the logistics of being the bishop. I thought a lot about that. I didn't really think about what it would be like for me. And then I found myself feeling all these emotions and I'm like, who am I? What's happening? I'm not this person. I'm not a really emotional highs and lows person. And so feeling that was really strange for me.
Well, and it sounds like that feeling of jealousy has never really been a dominant emotion in your life.
Never.
Then suddenly it's here and you're like, yeah. I'm not that lady.
No. Right. And then I was like, and then I had to really tell myself, like, the people he's spending time with aren't people that have hard things. They're dealing with hard things and I'm not jealous of them. I'm compassionate. I feel bad for them. I'm glad he can help them. But it was confusing to me in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I was feeling things I didn't think made any sense.
And was that something you vocalized as, or did you just sort of say, this is what I'm supposed to absorb as the bishop's wife?
No, I just kind of thought I needed to get over it.
Okay.
I don't think I told anyone. Yeah.
Have you since talked about it or is it still, you just sort of got over it?
No, I think I just worked through it.
Okay.
I prayed a lot. I journaled a lot.
Yeah.
I have a sister that I can talk to, but I didn't feel like I wanted to tell anyone here, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, he was busy and I just worked through it.
So explain maybe, I should have asked this earlier, as far as the state of your household, as far as how old kids are and what the day-to-day responsibilities look like.
Okay. So we have 3 kids, but 2 of our daughters live in Utah. They are attending college and working there. And so we just have a 12-year-old son at home.
Okay.
So he's fairly self-sufficient. He thinks it's awesome that his dad's the bishop.
Oh, yeah.
His dad has always traveled for work. And so he's not noticing much difference as far as the time that he's home. And he just thinks it's great that his dad's the bishop and gets to help all the people.
Yeah. And so for you, it's definitely a different feeling from him being out of town for work than him being at the church late at night.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's gone. So I'm used to him not being home, like I said before, but it is different.
Yeah.
Just because, and then he comes home and can't really talk about what he's been doing there. So you just feel kind of, it's just kind of lonely.
Yeah.
Because he comes home and at the end of any other day, you know, you're like, what'd you do today? How'd it go? But when you come up from the church, you don't kind of get that.
Yeah. Any other, you know, just general themes or ideas or topics have come up in those first 6-7 months that maybe we won't cover in some of your principles here?
I guess one thing that, as far as what was hard in the beginning, it was hard because we've always been pretty good at talking together, making decisions together. And I felt like in the beginning, and I think other wives have felt this way, that you just see this weight settle on your husband's shoulders and they just seem so, it seems heavy, you know? And so for me, I felt like, well, I can't ask him really anything anymore. Mm. He's too busy for me. You're like, I need to make a decision about when to take this trip or what we should do about this, but they just seemed so little and inconsequential compared to everything else he was dealing with. And that's just another form of loneliness that I felt in the beginning. I think I feel like we're past that now, but in the beginning, it just kind of felt like I have to do everything else because he's so busy taking care of all these people. So I can't bother him with the trivial things.
Yeah. And I would imagine, you know, after a long day, maybe he goes to work. He's at the church doing his meetings and appointments. And then he comes home and you're like, okay, I have this list of, you know, parenting questions or a couple questions that I need to bounce off of you. But that weight is there, or you can feel that energy that's just like, okay, it's 9 o'clock. I'm just going to let him go to bed. Right.
Yeah. You just don't want to bother him because you know, he's been dealing with stuff all day at work and at church and wherever, you know? Yeah. So then it just feels like, well, now I've got to shoulder all of this. And and at times that's okay. But at other times it feels like a lot.
Yeah.
And it's just another form of kind of, well, here I am on my own trying to figure this out.
And do you feel like you're sort of still in the mode of trying to figure out what that balance is? Like, obviously you can't live your life for five plus years, like absorbing all the weight of the household. Right. And so are you still sort of trying to figure that out?
I feel like we've figured that out better. I feel like, well, I don't know what he would say, but I feel like I'm kind of learning to just give him some space when he comes home, not bombard him with everything right when he gets in, because maybe that was something I wasn't doing well, but giving him some time and then going through things a little at a time.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let's jump in. There's some other areas that maybe I want to dig into here, but I think a lot of this will come up as we go through the principles here, or the best practices you put down. The first one you put is journal. How do you journal as a bishop's wife?
So during those times when I felt lonely and alone, I just felt that writing down my emotions helped me kind of make sense of them and feel better. Even though I hadn't told a person and received any validation from a person, I just felt like getting it down helped me make sense of it in my own mind and heart, you know? So I would journal when I was frustrated or when I felt alone, just to get it out. And then I know other women would burn that or shred it or get rid of it. But I kind of feel like I like to see how far we've come, you know, look back and see the challenges we had and that were better. So I don't get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, I think of someday when maybe one of your daughters is a bishop's wife. I mean, taking that to her, I mean, that'll be priceless, those moments.
Right. And then I try really hard to look for the blessings of this calling and journal those too. You know, when times when we've been directed by the Spirit, or times when he's come home with a great spiritual experience, or times when we've had an experience that's brought us closer or helped our family. So I try to keep a balance in there, but it's just a place where I've done that my whole life when I've been, I don't know if emotional is the word, but just when I've needed to get something out rather than burden other people, I just have written it down.
Yeah.
So it's been very effective for me, very therapeutic.
Yeah. I think journal is a great tip, and one that isn't obvious, you know, doesn't come obvious, but I remember being a bishop, just having, there's these moments where you just like step back and you're like, wow, like what we just witnessed there was something special, right? And so I have an Evernote account where I would journal, and I'd use a tag called Being Bishop. And I would just like try and detail these experiences. And now I go back to that and I've completely forgotten, you know, in my mind, some of these details, and to read those, it's so fulfilling and such a good reminder. So journaling's a great tip. Anything else in related to journaling?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Do you have a method, or is it maybe you just sort of spill your thoughts?
My thoughts. And I bought a new journal that's, I'm calling my bishop journal. And I, you know, because I've kept journals a lot throughout my life, but I just have a new one. I keep it by my bed and
just pen and paper.
I just write. Yeah.
Traditional. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Old school.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The next thing you put is find ways to help.
Okay. So like I said before, there's a lot he can't tell me, and I understand that, but there are things I can help with. We host a bishop's youth discussion at our house once a month where all the youth come over, and you know, I just help with the logistics of that, the setup, the treats, the sending out the word and the message if he wants help with that, birthday notifications for the kid, the primary and the youth. We try to reach out to them on their birthdays. And so just like behind the scenes things that help me feel like I'm involved in the calling, I try to do whatever I can.
Nice.
So just little things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you have a formal calling right now, or?
I do. I am in the primary presidency.
Oh, okay. Great. And so that keeps you somewhat busy as well, but you've definitely recognized that this is an unofficial calling that you need to act.
Yeah. And right? I think that, like I said, I think a lot of us in this position do feel kind of lonely just because they're so busy with all that they're doing. But I feel like putting myself in those places that I can help makes it feel like more of a team effort. And so then you don't feel that loneliness because you're doing something to help.
Freshman asses, but does the primary president sort of leverage that relationship you have with the bishop?
You know what? We're in a new ward, and so I've been to one meeting, and I don't know how that's going to work.
Okay.
We'll see. It's a direct line to the bishop. So.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think she had that in her last presidency too, so she must like it.
Well, you're definitely going to become the messenger. Like, probably. Will you ask your husband about this? And if they can get you on board, then they know it's a done deal.
Right? So, yeah. That's awesome.
The third point you wrote down is pray. How have your prayers changed since you're the bishop's wife?
Well, I just think it's important to keep that line of communication open. And for me, it just helps me to feel calmer when I know that I've asked Heavenly Father for help and I have faith that He's going to help me. So I pray for my husband a lot. And then I pray for myself to just have the mental and emotional capacity to understand what he needs and how I can help him and how I can help the ward and, you know, just praying for extra help and guidance. And and when you feel upset and angry or lonely or with those things, that's always a place you can go and always helps me feel better. So
any specific experiences that come to mind that from that practice or?
Not that I can think of. Just generally speaking, you know, when I know he's going to do something that might be difficult for him, you know, I pray extra hard for him just as because I know it's something I can do.
Yeah.
But I can't think of a specific time when I've done that, but just as a general rule.
And you mentioned before we recorded that you are, as far as putting your names on the role of the temple is something that you're proactive
in. Oh, all the time.
Yeah. You always take a stop at that booth there.
Yeah. And I'm like, can I put my own name? I guess so. I don't know, but I do. I put his and ours. And I just think all the prayers, the better. The more the prayers, the better.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Then you also mentioned spending time together. Then this is something you really have to be proactive about. So how do you make time for one another?
Yeah. So we've been married 27 years. So we've always had a good marriage, but we also became pretty independent over time and I'll go do my thing and you go do your thing. And I feel like this calling has brought us closer together and made us pay more attention to the time. So just little things like I've got to go to the store. Well, I'm going to come with you and I'm going to a baptism. I'm going to come with you. And when he goes to make visits, if it's appropriate, I go with him. And I just feel like since he was called to be bishop, that's just a higher priority for me and probably for him because we just have less time. And so we make a conscious effort to use the time that we can get. So we have gone probably on more dates, just out to dinner or whatever. Yeah. But then a lot of this church stuff, I just go whenever I can with him.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting as time, you know, time becomes more valuable or those moments of time become more of a snapshot that you sort of are more intentional, right?
Exactly.
If you're always just hanging out at home in the evenings, then you sort of know he'll always just be in the next room or whatever it is. So that's a hidden blessing for sure.
And even when we do have a free night, I think we appreciate it just hanging out at home, you know, but we stay home together and enjoy it. So it's just become more of a priority than before. Yeah. Little things like going to youth conference or going to church, things like that. Anything that I can go, I go.
Yeah. When you go on visits with him, you know, in the ward, sometimes it may feel like, oh, I'm, you know, this is a serious situation or they look like they're in a tough spot. How do you interject yourself or do you see yourself in a certain role in those interactions?
I haven't done that yet. I haven't had any experience with that because we just got put in a new ward. So it's been mostly just getting to know people. We met all the ward council, some of the families that were moved with us. So they were more social visits. So I haven't gone
with
him.
Are great.
Those are great.
Those are easy.
Right? Yeah, because it's fun to get to know people and I know he's going to be working with them. So I want to understand, you know, who they are and how they work together, but I haven't gone on any that were uncomfortable or difficult yet. So,
well, buckle up. We'll see.
Yeah.
And then lastly, you put focus on the positive. How do you do that?
Well, I think that goes kind of back to what I said about journaling. Like there are hard days and difficult things, but I just, as a general rule, I feel like I'm an optimist and I just try to think about all the blessings that are coming through this calling and the growth I've seen in my husband, the people he's been able to help, just the things that the way it's brought us closer together. I just, when I'm feeling down, I just think about those things. I mean, it sounds simple, but I feel like it's effective and it works to just not dwell on the parts that are hard.
Right. And I would imagine, and maybe you're not far enough into this dynamic, but as the primary president, sometimes, and I think all of us, and maybe I'll speak for myself here, but being in callings, it's sort of when you've had a bad day to come home, you sort of vent to your spouse, right? Mm-hmm. And now you not only vent to your spouse, but you're venting to the bishop that can maybe do something about this problem, right? And so those moments, it's like, okay, we really need to be intentional, staying positive because I can point out a lot of problems that you need to talk to or you need to do or you need to approach, right?
Yes, exactly. I've said to him more than once, do you want to hear this stuff or not? Like, should I write this down, journal it, right? And not even big things, but just, you know, you hear how auxiliaries are doing things or how people are doing things and you're like, am I supposed to be telling you or not telling you? I don't know.
Yeah.
So we're figuring that out.
Cool. Anything else we haven't missed before we wrap up here?
Well, can I make a comment to bishops or just to bishops' wives?
I'm sure there's many bishops listening. Please do.
I really loved when you interviewed your wife, how you talked about coming home and sharing the spiritual things, you know, like, because you have them, I think you said you have them served on a platter and we're home with the kids. And I shared that with my husband, and he's been so good at doing it since I mentioned that. And I think that's really important, because like we keep talking about, there's so many things you can't share. But if you come home and share what you can share, you know, spiritual moments or neat experiences you have, it just makes me feel like I'm more included. Like we really are more of a partnership in it. And it makes a huge difference to me. And I'm sure to other women too, because that's how we like to talk and share, you know? And so when your husband comes home and shares what he can, I feel like that's really, really helpful.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Especially for me, as I just process internally. So
same.
Be intentional,
so
right? This is how we live.
Yeah.
Right? Why do we got to talk about everything?
And I also feel like he comes home from doing all this work, and probably the last thing you want to do is talk about it, because you've been doing it all day, right?
True.
And
that.
So just sharing what you can, though, I think goes a long way.
Cool. Any other thoughts or comments? Or
this is a great experience. We're learning and growing, and we're thankful for it, but it's not always easy. But it's one of those things that I think what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Right. And these hard experiences help us to grow. And so it's been great.
Yeah.
We have a ways to go, but we're going
to
do it.
It'll be interesting for you to listen to this episode when on the week he's released
right?
in future years, right?
And just laugh at myself. Right. What did I know?
Well, hey, we're all learning.
How charming that I thought I knew something.
Well, as I do, the last question I have is, as you reflect on these handful of months that you've been in this unofficial calling as a leader, as a bishop's wife, how has that made you a better follower of Jesus Christ?
I feel like it's made me pay more attention to the people around me and just try to be more compassionate and loving and non-judgmental. And you realize everybody is carrying a burden, and you just want to be kind and loving and share Christ's love with the people that you meet. So I feel like that it's just brought that more to my attention, watching my husband do that and then trying to do it as well.
That concludes my interview with Jill Walker. Big shout out to her for letting me throw some questions at her, especially as a new bishop's wife, only into this journey about 7 months. But nonetheless, it's amazing how much you can learn in such a short time. And that's really a pivotal point. Those first 6 months where you're just sort of trying to figure out life again, right? What life is like with this new dynamic of the husband as the bishop and the father as the bishop and how that works. And so I'm sure that many of you listening gain from Jill's perspective. Now, in these How I Lead interviews, I'm trying to pair them up. So do two interviews in one full episode. And so I have another interview to share with you during this episode. And this one is with Cassandra Merrill, who is also the wife of a bishop who has maybe a little more experience with 4.5+ years in the role as the bishop's wife, as her husband is quickly approaching the end of his term. At least that's what he's hoping for. They are also down in Arizona in Mesa area. And I really appreciated this conversation with Cassandra. She and her family has faced a lot of adversity during the last 4.5 years that she doesn't get into all the details of it, but nonetheless, you can feel it. And some of the things that she says in this are so raw and real that I think many bishops' wives listening and any leader will really resonate with this and feel inspired and motivated to keep going. And be vulnerable, really, you know, as the wife of a bishop and really as a leader to stand up and, you know, whether it's in a Sunday school class, a meeting or in a sacrament meeting to and share some real moments and trials that you're facing, even though that you're the bishop and or the bishop's family and should have life all figured out. Right. But that's really not the case. So you're really going to enjoy this segment as I talk with Cassandra Merrill, and she shares how she leads as the wife of a bishop. Today, I am in, once again, in Mesa, Arizona with Cassandra Merrill. How are you, Cassandra?
Good, you?
Good.
Good.
So give us some background on you, who you are, and what brought us here today.
Well, I was born and raised in Mesa, along with my husband was also, and we didn't know each other, though, growing up. I come from a mixed family where my dad had 3 children with one wife and then divorced and married. My mom had 5 more.
Wow.
And then they got a divorce and my mom remarried and now has 4 more. So I'm one of 12. I was married 24 years ago in November, and we have 7 children. I had 2 daughters first and then 5 sons.
Wow.
But the first 5 were born before I was 23. and they're a year apart. And so the first five came really fast. So they were 4, 3, 2, 1, and a newborn.
Wow.
And then 5 years later, had another one. And 3 years later, had our last one.
You lived to tell about it.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
It's enjoying. That's cool.
And you are the wife of a bishop.
I am.
Right. And in the Mesa area. And how long has he been bishop?
He, if you ask him, 18 years.
Yeah.
But 4 years and 4 months.
Nice. So there may be an end in sight.
Yes.
Here.
He says he's down to months.
Nice.
So
very good. And what do you remember about that experience of the calling, that when the calling came?
I wasn't surprised at all. Scott had been in the past two bishoprics as a counselor. So he'd been in there for a really long time. But my husband is a leader and somebody who people admire and respect. And because it was just time, I just knew, I don't know if most people get that feeling, but it just kind of knew it was coming.
Cool.
Yeah. So I wasn't surprised. He was and completely overwhelmed, but I had complete faith that it was the right time and the right person. Yeah. So,
and prior to that, I mean, as far as your life and marriage and things were marching right along, obviously everybody has their problems, but you're in a good spot to take on that calling.
I don't know about that. life has always been very extremely, how do I put it, difficult. We have had a lot of things happen with our children or special needs children and things like that, where we just feel like we're trying to figure out life together still, you know?
So, and where are you at as far as, you mentioned you had seven kids, but what's the dynamic of having those kids, or are they in high school or during the last few years?
Right after he was called into the bishopric or to be the bishop, our daughter was married. Our second daughter went on a mission. Our third child, our son, left on a mission. Our fourth one is on a mission right now. Our fifth one should have his call in the next 2 months. So they're 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22 right now.
Wow.
And then I have a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old.
So you were dealing with a house full of teenagers through a lot of being.
We had five teenagers when he became bishop, yes.
Wow. So, and that's a critical point, and you've already had plenty to juggle at that point. Right?
There was a lot going on. I had just started school. So I was going to school full time through BYU online. And my husband works 60, 70 hours a week. And on top of that was bishop. It was a crazy, crazy, crazy time.
Yeah.
And I was fearful of five teenagers with a bishop dad. That usually doesn't turn out very well for a lot of people, you know, in the church, like, oh, the teenagers, you know, kind of tend to. And so I was very fearful. But as I said, in a few months, he will put our fifth child through the temple as their bishop. Fifth out of fifth.
Yeah. There's those tender mercies of him being the bishop.
Absolutely.
When they go on missions and go through the temple and those things, those special interviews. Any other dynamics, generally speaking, that have played into or how you describe your time as the bishop's wife?
Well, I would say that the first year was probably the most extreme hard for us to understand each other and each other's roles in being the bishop and the bishop's wife. It was very difficult. Scott and I think very differently. We act very differently. We react very differently. And so we've always said we're both getting to this point and I go all the way this way and he goes completely the opposite way, but we are going to the same point. We have the same goals. We have the same dreams. We have the same, you know, we want our family forever, but we have just a completely different way of achieving that typically. And that kind of came to a head at that moment where I wanted to be the complete supportive wife, didn't ask questions, just, you know, made the house comfortable. And sorry, I might get emotional during this part.
Yeah, that's expected.
And watching him go through the stuff quietly and silently in our bedroom at night, I could feel the pain of members in our ward. I had no idea who they were, but I could feel their pain because he was carrying that. And there were times where nobody could feel my pain. And I have never needed a friend. I have millions of friends. I'm friends with everyone. And I came to a point one day where I needed a friend and nobody knew that I was hurting just because of my personality. And I hadn't spoken with my husband for a week because I did not like him. And I just felt like it was very unfair. Everybody prays for the bishop. Everybody prays for him. Our state presidency prays for him. And there was a point where I felt like, wait, hold on. While he's out taking care of everybody's problems, I'm dying over here by myself. And there was one day where I just couldn't take it anymore. During that week, my oldest son was, I was told he wasn't going to graduate high school. And that goes into a lot of other issues with this particular son. And I was his savior for many years. And then our last child has a disease called tuberous sclerosis complex. He has over 20 brain tumors. He has over 30 heart tumors. Whoa. He has hundreds of tumors on his face. He has tumors in his kidneys. He has tumors everywhere. And I had gone to a doctor's appointment, which I always do by myself because Scott works so much. And in this doctor's appointment, they said, oh, by the way, he has another genetic disease. He's going to need probably a kidney transplant when he's a teenager. And this has nothing to do with the tuberous sclerosis. And I was just like, wow. And so this week I had taken in a lot of punches.
And this was during the first year or just?
This is all during the first year. Wow. And so I was just like, but I don't like him right now. I like literally didn't like my husband at this point where I was just like, he just has so much on his plate with what's, you know, taking care of our family and then the bishopric and then his businesses. And so I just carried it. And finally, and before this, my husband and I will argue about something, but we never go to bed upset. And so for this whole week, I hadn't spoken to him and I was pretty upset about, but I was not about to go apologize. I was like, you are going to know what this feels like, you know? And he came and sat on our bed next to me and he just says, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about this? Like, this can't keep going. And I just said, well, let me just tell you, well, you've been having this horrific week, you know, with being a bishop and doing this and the business and everything. Let me tell you about my week. And then I told him, and it was a moment for both of us. Oh, and then I did tell him, I said, well, while you're going through all your struggles, guess what? You were given the mantle. You were called, and he was going to protect you during this time. He's sending major angels to you to like carry you and to carry everybody else's burdens. And I'm just your wife. I'm just over here. And I was really upset. And I just said, so what are you going to do about this? Mm-hmm. Because while I got a text from another lady in the ward telling me how appreciative she was of my husband, and she's so thankful that he was there because he saved her during this really, really difficult time. And this is a girl that I love very much, yeah. You know, but she was thanking me for allowing him to be where he is at this point in our lives. And I said, well, what she doesn't know is that I'm over here dying myself and he's taking care of everybody else. And it was a moment where we realized, holy cow, we're both in this really lonely spot and we're both having to do this and trudge through these trenches together. And we figured out how we were going to do that together and that it's okay to rely on each other. It's okay that I take my child's problems to my husband, even though so has everybody else in the ward. Mm. It's okay. Like, he needs to know those things. He needs to know if I'm lonely too. And
because you were sort of protecting him from that information because you knew he had already enough on his plate. Why bring these, you know, familial issues to him?
When I knew I could handle it, I could just take care of it myself.
Yeah.
And I was trying to protect him from that. And then the spirit whispered really, really strong and impactful to me. I've sent angels to watch over you too. You carry that mantle with him to a point. You need to look for those. And that's when I started realizing he doesn't have it better than I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I'm his wife, you know?
Yeah.
And he doesn't leave us.
So if you were to go back in time and talk to yourself or talk to another bishop's wife that's sort of in that state, then I think it typically happens in year one or month one where you're just trying to figure out how this life moves forward and the dynamics of it. What advice would you give to them?
I actually have spoken to some and I've just kind of reminded them that this was a calling that he called both of us. My husband didn't get that calling alone. We were both called into that office and that the angels surround us, if not more, during that time. And just look for them because they are there. And just to know that I don't believe that people just pray for the bishop. I believe that they pray for him and his wife and his children.
Yeah.
It was just a moment where I just felt so alone that I kind of thought that. But I have been very open with my feelings. This is a story that my whole ward knows. This is a story that I tell my ward everything, because I don't ever want them to believe that we have it together. Hmm. But we are together and we're going to get there together. But life is not easier because he's the bishop, or we are not better because of this calling, but that their prayers for me and their prayers for my children are felt.
Wow.
And I really, really appreciate them.
Yeah. That you don't have it together, but you are together. What a powerful message to others in the ward who think, well, the bishop has it together. So,
oh yeah.
He can't relate to me, but, and again, it's not that your marriage was in shambles on the edge of any, you know, of destruction or anything, but there was still a wrestle there, right?
Yeah.
There's still a lot to work through. Another thing you mentioned was I want to make sure I hit it. You know, you mentioned that you were invited in that office too, to receive that call together. And that you got to a point where you realized that you weren't being asked to be the only parent in your house, right?
No.
And you were sort of trying to do that, thinking, I'm going to absorb the shock of the household, and then he doesn't have to worry about it. Everything will be better for him, and right? But to realize that nobody's asking for the bishop to not be a parent or to take, you know, 5 years off of that.
Right? No.
So is there anything, you know, that you've put in place or that you've talked through with your husband so that parenting can still happen, or?
I think I just allowed myself to not do it alone. I've allowed him to be involved in some of the frustrations, you know. And I think some part of it too was me, if the kids aren't doing well, I'm a stay-at-home mom. Like, so if the kids aren't doing well in school and they're failing, well, that's my fault, you know. And so it's okay for me not to own my children's mistakes.
Yeah.
And it's so I can go to him and say, hey, this is what's going on with so-and-so, you know, this child. What can we do together, you know? So,
and you still counsel together, as most parents should, right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's powerful. As far as with your children, how did they respond to that? With five teenagers, I mean, that's such a critical point in their development and progress, not spiritually, but, you know, socially and so many other ways. Did you see them sort of have to go through their own journey with dad as the bishop?
I tried to like look for signs, you know, where it might be a struggle or something, but I haven't. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of our daughters, when she came back, our oldest, when she came back from being a nanny on the East Coast and came back and lived with us, she was going to a singles ward and not to be in our ward, you know, but she was living with us. And when she started the process of becoming engaged and everything, she moved back into our ward. And my husband was like, oh, I don't know, like, you know, that means that I'm going to like interview and stuff like that. And she said, that's absolutely the reason why I'm coming back.
Oh, cool.
I want you to be the one that gives me my temple recommend. And so, I think our kids have experienced some other pretty traumatic things, that this was probably the least on the list, was having a dad as a bishop.
Yeah.
And they, at times when they could have spoken, you know, our stake president and my husband has made it very clear that they don't have to talk to the bishop. They can come to the stake president and talk to him because he still needs to be dad, you know. And they have said, absolutely not. I wouldn't go to anybody else. Like, I'm so glad that my dad is the one I can talk to as a bishop too. So,
but still important to let them know that, because I'm sure there's some teenagers out there that are, you know, holding back shame and all sorts of things because I don't want to go talk to my dad.
Yeah, bishop to know everything. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the stake president is definitely still an option, and they can, you know, work that out. I was going to ask about, you mentioned in the survey you filled out as far as not dwelling on the negative. And this is something that came up in a lot of the survey submissions that came through, is just that it's so easy to focus on the negative, right? And you kind of talked about that early on. It was sort of, it seemed like all that there was a negative, right? So what does that look like when you say don't dwell on negative?
I don't know. There can be some negative depending on the ward dynamics. There's a saying that goes, you're only bishop for 5 years, because the first year, 20% hate him. The second year, the next 20%, the next year, the 20%. So then after 5 years, everybody hates you. So it's time to move out and be, you know, be released. But I haven't felt that. I know people probably are upset with him, you know, because of different reasons, but the people, we've been in this ward our whole marriage, and I was 18 when we moved in. So they've grew up with me. And So I just, the love that our ward has for us, and they have gone through every one of our traumatic journeys, our amazing miracles, they've all walked that with us. And so I would say that I've talked to a lot of other bishops' wives, and they've said how difficult it is. And one of the things maybe that were difficult is that we live in a glass house. Being that I have 5 teenagers at one time, that could be, you know, like
anything can happen.
Yeah, right. Anything could happen. But either everything that I say or my husband says is either gospel or it's used against you. Mm. And so that's probably been my most difficult. And because I am so open and because I am so friendly and because I do everything with everyone, I've had to take a seat back and just kind of like recluse a little bit and be careful because of those reasons.
Yeah.
So, and because I'm far from perfect.
Right.
And just because that's his calling does not mean that I've got it together. Yeah. And so they might hear me say a bad word or, you know, whatever, or, you know, watch me beat one of my children.
Right. I'm sure that it comes, right? So you mentioned that your personality between your husband's so different, and he's, you know, very, I don't know if introvert is the right word, but definitely processes.
Just very private.
Very private. So I would imagine that he comes home and he's not the type that wants to talk it out or talk about a rough day or...
No.
So how do you... Because I feel like the being as in the bishop, that's just magnified, right? Because everybody, you know, experiences problems and burdens, but suddenly it's the whole ward's problems and burdens that he's bringing home. Is there any way that, you know, you could maybe tell that he's had a rough day and what do you do about that? Just leave dad alone for a while or...
Yeah, I try. You know, it's hard because when I'm having a rough day, I want somebody's arms wrapped around me telling me it's going to be okay and talk it through. And with his business is private, you know, he owns a mortgage bank. And so he never discusses like who he's doing a business with or anything just because it's somebody's money, you know. And then he goes to the bishop's office. So he goes from one private office to another private office, and he just would never even speak of something just in case I know or something would come up later. And, oh, I heard my husband talking about that, but didn't tell me who it was, you know, so he keeps it very private. But there are times when he comes home and like I had said, the pain is so excruciating and it's more of just let's just keep the house peaceful to try to keep him, you know, just because with 7 kids, 5 boys, you know, it's crazy. And so not so much to leave him alone, but to let him have a second.
Yeah.
There's times where I can see him really angry and then where his heart is broken for someone, you know, and there's 2 different feels that I feel when, and he doesn't say a word, but I can feel it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is, he's angry with a situation, super upset with how somebody maybe talked to him or treated him or, you know, or they didn't listen or something, you know. But then there's other times where the pain is so real that it's like oozing all over.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes hard when that's our home that has to take and absorb everybody else's struggles.
Yeah. Let's see, as far as any, you've covered a lot of these principles that you mentioned, as far as I love this concept of that angels surround you, even the bishop's wife, they're not all there for the bishop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Something that I try to focus on, and I talked about this last night with Scott. A lot of people go through really big struggles with their children or their marriage or whatever, and they are very quiet about it because then they don't want to bring shame or whatever. And in our 5 years or 4 years, 4 months, some pretty tragic things have happened where in our ward, we've had a few missionaries come home and the pain is so, you could feel the mom's pain that their child is home and they're
come
going
home early, right?
Yeah, yeah. Come home early.
Quote unquote early.
Yeah. But you walk on eggshells, like you don't know what to say. You don't know what to do. And for me, I have been open. I have stood at the pulpit and tore my heart out. Our son came home early, our first missionary. And I never thought it would happen to us. And here we are, the bishop's family. And I just stood up in Relief Society and just said, hey, we're here. It sucks. It sucks so bad. But we are all going to love him. We are all going to support him. The one word that he said was, I'm so glad I'm coming home to Desert Vista Ward.
Wow.
And that was powerful. So many people feel so much shame And it's because people don't know what to say. And I opened the whole can of worms for everybody to talk about my family, my child. And it was one of the greatest experiences we've ever felt. In fact, he even stood up and spoke in state conference a few weeks later after he had returned home. One of the general authorities was there and caught a hold of him and was talking to him. And he said, "You are my hero. You came home. You did not lie the rest of the time that you were there," and spoke of it. And so it was for our whole state to see, wow, you know, our son up there. And another hard, difficult road was our daughter was sexually assaulted, you know, before she got married. And then after she got married, she tried to kill herself just barely after getting married in the temple. And I spoke of that openly, like, this is real. This is not something to be played with. And I need your help. I need your love. I need your prayers. Do not be afraid to talk to me. Do not be afraid to stick your arm around my daughter and tell her how much you love her. Because that was the reason why she obviously wanted to go in the first place, was in her head, she felt nobody loved her. But how often do we walk up to somebody who just tried to kill themselves and tell them how much they're loved? You don't know what to say. Wow. But going through my son's diagnoses and all of those other things, and our other, you know, children going through very tragic things, it's real life, people. Like, it doesn't need to be secret. It doesn't need to be, and there's obviously sacred things that happen, but it's okay to talk and be there. And I felt like that has brought our ward as a family together so that they can love and support us through some of those really difficult things. And as maybe it opened the door for people to understand that the bishop is going through a lot right now himself. Yeah. So maybe, just maybe, I could call my ministering brother or my ministering sister to help me with this task or with this struggle. Or maybe I should turn to the Lord, or maybe, you know, and just kind of and realize there's everyone struggles. Everyone is going through something. He's going through a lot of himself.
And you totally dissolve the shame of any of those situations by speaking it, right? And by saying this, you know, here we are, the bishop's family, and these are some things they're struggling with. And if you're struggling, you know, let's figure this out. Yeah, you're there for each other. So the last question I have is, as you have been a leader as a bishop's wife, I mean, you've given some great examples of ways that you've led. How has that made you a better follower of Jesus Christ?
Well, I just think our Savior taught us to love and be compassionate, and understanding everyone and loving them for everything that they are, everything that they have to go through, their struggles, their addictions, and all of that. Just seeing that in our ward, but also them experiencing my issues with me, has just made me want to be a better example and a better follower of Jesus Christ for those that are around me. And you don't have to be the bishop's wife to be a leader. I'm led all the time by everyone in our ward just by their simple acts and their simple testimonies.
And that concludes my interview with Cassandra Merrill. Wow, what an emotional, real episode. When she said, you know, that phrase of, you know, we don't have it all together, but we are together, you know, something along that line. Wow, that was tweetable. That was, should go on a t-shirt. You know what I mean? It just encompassed the role of being in a relationship that is also influenced by a heavy volunteer leadership calling, that you don't always have it figured out. You don't always have it together, but you are together. And that's really what matters at the end of the day, to do it together and lean on each other, support each other. And again, realize that you can bless the lives around you while also allowing those lives that are around you to bless your life. So stay tuned for even more episodes of How I Lead as the Bishop's Wife. I have other people lined up for an interview, some recorded, that I'm going to spread out throughout the year as we take time to do the How I Lead segment, and you're definitely going to enjoy them. And hopefully in the future, as new bishops are called, their wives or themselves can draw upon these episodes and feel encouraged, feel hope, be better prepared, and just listen to some of the best practices of how other leaders have faced these daunting callings and how they found success in growing their families while they grew in their calling. And don't forget, visit our product store at leadingsaints.org and check out the 2019 ward calendar. And remember, be a leader, not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.